You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
It's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, well, is beyond description. It's Mark Mulcaster. Mark, how are you doing?
You always fall back on that introduction when you don't actually have one prepared.
Yeah. You've got me. It took you 150 episodes, but you figured me out.
Yeah. How are you doing, buddy? You're right.
I'm good. It doesn't seem that long since we spoke last time, because it's not that long since we spoke last time, is it?
You know, it hasn't been that long. So there's no point me asking you how's your week in Star Wars been, because it's really been how's your weekend in Star Wars been. Have you done anything? Have you been up to anything?
Oh, well, weirdly, yes, I did do something at the weekend. Oh, it's a Wales Comic Con, which isn't in Wales. It's in Telford. Went along with Paul Naylor, and we had a fine afternoon. Not a monster amount of Star Wars stuff there, but there was Femi Taylor, and there was Giancarlo Esposito, who we sort of saw at a distance, and Anthony Daniels was there. So, yeah, it was good. It was a nice afternoon. Not a monster amount of content, but we had a very nice time indeed. How about you? How's your weekend been?
Weekend's been good. No Star Wars to speak of, but I did go to a very special gig on Saturday night. Composer David Arnold, who has composed some James Bond scores, he's taken some of his compositions out on the road for the very first time. So he's taken it out with like a six-piece band. So it's kind of a stripped back, more rocky kind of feel, which is right up my street. And he's actually a local lad. He's actually from Luton. And he basically did his warm-up gig in a very small community arts centre, which is basically the Hat Factory, or used to be the Hat Factory back in the days in like 1930-odd, when they kicked out 7 million-odd hats from Luton. clearly, you know, fashion's moved on since then.
I thought only vans came from Luton. I'm so ignorant.
No, hats as well, apparently. So, okay. Yeah, got to see this this amazing performance in a very intimate venue. Stay behind, had a little chat with David and Matt. He was very generous with his time, very gracious. And he was kind of like, yeah, this is a warm-up gig. We might actually drop a couple of things from the set, gauging how it all went on the night and stuff. But the most important thing is he had some really interesting stories about writing the James Bond songs that he's written or has been involved in and performed in. So it was just mind-blowing, really. You know, I'd love to bring it all back to Star Wars. I'd love for old John Williams to do something like that. That would be awesome. Yeah, an evening with.
It might be a bit beyond John, but you'd think maybe Ludwig Göransson or some of the other composers, or Kevin Kiner or those kind of guys could do something.
So yeah, so anyhow, back to Star Wars. What's in the news since we last spoke, my friend?
Ming-Na Wen. She's currently promoting Pencils versus Pixels, which is her latest project. And of course, when she was being interviewed, she was also asked about her role as Fennec Shand in The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett and The Bad Batch, and whether or not she'll return. And basically, now the strike's over, you'd like to think that she'll be back. Collider with the people that interviewed her, and they asked the question, this is Collider speaking, I very selfishly want to ask when Fennec Shand is coming back, but I know that's not something you can answer. And her answer straight away, I want her to come back now. Please, who do I have to call? Who do I have to write letters to, say Collider? And she replies, yeah, start the petition, please. I don't know. You know, we just ended the strike and I'll be ready and excited to put on my three-layered leather outfit and be Fennec. I miss being her. Yes, very much. But right now, I'm just working on a cookbook and developing a couple of projects. So, no Fennec in the immediate future. But that being said, there is Bad Batch Season 3 and there are rumours that she is coming back as Fennec in Bad Batch Season 3. So she is back after a fashion, certainly as the voice role of Fennec Shand. But if she comes back, can you see Fennec coming back in perhaps Season 4 Mando, or if there's a Season 2 Ahsoka in that? Or do you think they'll hold her now, like maybe they will with Boba Fett, and keep it for the Filoni movie?
Ooh, good question. As far as I'm concerned, the sooner she does it, the better. If we think she's coming back for Bad Batch, and that means that they're not necessarily keeping her completely for super special occasions as such. However, I mean, I would think that she's almost as close to like a recurring character as you can get in Mando. Yeah. I think she was a standout character in the Book of Boba Fett. And I almost wish, a little bit like with Mando season 3, that maybe, you know, you do Book of Boba Fett season 2 or volume 2, and it's more skewed towards Fennec Shand rather than maybe Boba Fett. So I'm pretty sure, though, that she knows exactly the people to call to get something moving, at least to put the feelers out. I'm pretty sure that she's got Mr. Filoni and probably Mr. Favreau on speed dial anyway. So
yeah,
hopefully we won't have to wait too long.
I'd love to see her back. I think we all would. It's a great character, and she's a brilliant actress to have around. She loves Star Wars. She's a great advocate for Star Wars when she's out there talking about it. I just wonder that sometimes, it's kind of a separate question, but with characters like Fennec, with characters like Boba Fett, do you feel like you need to see them all the time? Or is it more special? Let's say you don't see Fennec till the movie and she rocks up halfway through with just the most kick-ass scene ever, and all that time we've waited is forgotten. Do you think some characters are better to hold back, or would you rather see them more often?
That's a difficult question to answer, really. Some characters, less is always more. And there's always that thing, isn't it? It's like, if, for example, Luke Skywalker flew in and saved a day every other week on Mando, A, it wouldn't definitely feel so special, and B, it would detract from the rest of the characters, you know, and they've got their own little Luke Skywalker in the form of Grogu. So, albeit I don't think he's too fussed about power converters from Ankhead and Toshi Station. So I think it kind of depends, really. It's all down to how they do it, getting them back now and again. I think it's a nice pop, isn't it, at the end of the day. It's sometimes you just wonder if it's just down to writers kind of almost writing themselves into a bit of a corner, and they don't quite know how to get out of it with the, you know, the characters that they've got on the playing field without them.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think when you read the comics, obviously we review the comics on Fanther, and you often see, and we say, I mean, I put it in the reviews all the time, that, yeah, there's trillions of people in the Star Wars galaxy with actually only 1,000 people who all know each other. So if you need a character in a comic to make an appearance or just rock up from walking around the corner, you can do it. Mm. Whereas in the TV show, it is slightly different, but by the same token, wow, Boba Fett. Oh, look, Fennec Shand or whatever. But as you say, if it works for the moment, it works in the story, it works for that episode, then it's a worthwhile thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's I think it's down to how contrived it feels when it happens. And so I think you have to kind of have a little bit of lead up. However, I think like Fennec Shand is one of those characters that is probably going to be just popping up all over the place. You know, I think she's not necessarily settled on Tatooine, and I think she'll probably more likely to have her fingers in lots of little pies and stuff around the galaxy. So it's more than likely with her. As things are left at the moment, Sabine Wren and Ahsoka, they're not even in the galaxy. So Ahsoka's popped up a couple of times, and she did that tendency to do that in Rebels. So therefore, she's kind of off of the playing field for a little bit, or at least not on the same playing field as most of the other characters. So that takes her off. We'd probably assume that it's slightly written and discussed when we're breaking the stories. Like, how do you tie this story into the wider galaxy? How does this become relevant within the larger conflict or the larger galactic events? And so having these characters kind of come in is a nice way of doing it. It's that whole almost like a soft pilot, you know, sometimes where you get characters kind of introduced into one show and then like lo and behold, 6 months later, oh, they've got their own spin-off series now. But it's a good way of doing it, because it's a good way of testing the water as to like what is resonating with the fans.
And it works with a character like Fennec, because I don't know how you feel about her as a character. To me, it feels like Fennec Shand's been around forever. And really, she's only been around for 4 years. But then, when they do it right, it lands and it sticks really well. And I think Fennec as a character, we're seeing a lot of her earlier days in Bad Batch, and hopefully continue with whatever season or whatever show continues after Bad Batch when that finishes for season 3, if they want to carry on in that era. I hope they do. But you could imagine that easily a Marvel miniseries, easily E.K. Johnson does a Fennec Shand book. There's a lot of play in that character.
There's a lot of play, and I think these are the kind of characters that I think Lucasfilm are desperate to push forward. They don't have the legacy, so therefore you can give them to like an author and say, right, have a bit of fun with their backstory. And okay, sure, as with any bit of expanded universe writing, it's all fair game when a director comes in and suddenly wants to actually pick up that character and do something with them. However, they don't feel quite as disposable. And also, I think they're the kind of characters that they want to see better kind of embodiment of representation in the galaxy as well.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
Taika Waititi, he has his detractors and he has his fans, and he's doing a Star Wars project, which is ongoing and percolating at the moment. On the red carpet of his latest film, He did mention Star Wars, didn't say an awful lot about it, but did say it is, inverted commas, a Taika Waititi film, and it's going to piss people off, he said with a laugh. Mark, what do you think? Is he just being mischievous? Was he caught in the moment on the red carpet? Do you think he's giving us kind of a clue as to what he's doing? Where do you think we are with this particular little soundbite?
People like Taika and even Rian Johnson know that if they're going to go and do anything, if they're going to appear at a red carpet or even like, you know, the opening of a Walmart or something like that, somebody is going to ask them about their next Star Wars project. That's just the nature of it. As soon as you kind of get associated with Star Wars, you're almost like forever tied to it one way or another, and you always then henceforth get questions about it, either because it didn't happen or because, you know, it still might happen. Yeah, so I mean, I think he probably had a good idea roughly of what he would say and probably knows exactly the kind of limits to what he can say anyway. So Taika's kind of films like Thor, Love and Thunder and Ragnarok, they really pivoted that one character into a very different direction from what he was before. The thing is, when you've done that, like with somebody like Thor, there's not really any way you can go back to it, I don't think. Not very easily anyway. There has to be some thought into that and a bit of some serious consideration with Lucasfilm as to what they're going to do. Will it piss people off? I'm sure if it is as irreverent as any of his other productions that he's ever done, I'm sure some people who take their Star Wars very, very seriously will probably not like it. And therefore, it might actually resonate with a new and a wider audience because it's probably a little bit more accessible. Until I actually see a trailer or something, called something saying coming soon, directed by Taika Waititi, I'm kind of not even going to hold my breath because it could be years out or it could happen next week.
We've mentioned Taika on here loads of times and always make the point that, yes, you've got the awesomeness of Ragnarok, the slightly over-the-topness of Love and Thunder, and then you see what he did in Star Wars, and it was actually quite measured and quite, well, very within the boundaries of what you would expect from Star Wars. And to his credit, you know, you could have anticipated it being a bit more Farscape than Star Wars. It stayed tonally very much with what we were seeing at that point in season one of Mando. So he certainly can deliver that kind of thing. You wonder, humor-wise, if that's the tack he's going to take. I mean, maybe he's the greatest action director we never knew was around. That could be in him. So, you know, it's very easy to judge people on their past projects, let's say. Who knew Spielberg had Schindler's List in him when he's coming off the back of Jurassic Park, let's say. I'm not comparing the two, but, you know, tonally they're very different. So maybe Taika has got something quite surprising waiting for us as Star Wars fans, because clearly he loves the franchise, he loves the world. He said that he's not expecting to go back to do Thor 5, but that being said, the door is open to do more Marvel stuff. So he's still very much within the realms of these kind of projects. It'd be very interesting to see if we get any news of this. Maybe D23 next year, because there's no celebration. So maybe that would be the place they could announce things.
We're still kind of on the back foot, aren't we, of the strikes and stuff. And I don't necessarily ever get the feeling that Lucasfilm were sat waiting to push something out and start announcing stuff. I think we're going to probably have, and this is where I'm totally wrong, by Tuesday or Wednesday, I think probably we're going to have a quiet rest of the year. And then, you know, it's going to start up again in earnest in January. So, but yeah, that's it. There's no celebration. So that is like your first obvious platform for announcements. So then, like you said, you look to D23. So that could be it. But then at the same time, he says, completely contradicting himself, we know that Lucasfilm used to have a way of putting stuff out. They kind of now just seem to just put stuff out whenever. There doesn't necessarily seem to be a schedule or something. Somebody makes that decision and then they go with it. So it could all change. I don't think we're going to get much between now and the new year. You watch. I'm going to be totally wrong. Next week's episode, new films, new TV series, everything.
2-hour long episode of Making Tracks coming next week.
Which won't be a bad thing. So, you know, it's good for me to be wrong in this respect for once.
Hey, it's Alyssa Wong, writer of Dr. Aphra, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Alden Ehrenreich, we may see him come back at some juncture, possibly in the Lando series, but for right now, he's having a banner year. He was in Oppenheimer, he was in Cocaine Bear, and speaking recently, he did mention Solo: A Star Wars Story in quite a unique fashion. Here's what he said. He said, "I love the original spirit of how they, as Lord and Miller, wanted to make Solo, and I did it because it was this great platform from which I could do my own thing. But what I realized at that point is I hadn't built my own thing enough to be able to do it. I knew that I didn't know myself in that way yet, and that takes a certain amount of time and effort and failure in its own kind of enclosed way. That's what I spent that time doing. So I think he's referring to the fact that, not only obliquely referencing the fact that Solo didn't do as well as it might have done at the box office, and hey, we've had an Indiana Jones film not do so good, we've had a Marvel film not so good, Star Wars isn't unique anymore in this fashion, but the Lord and Miller project was what attracted him. Obviously, what came out was different, and the performance would have been different, and the end result would have been different. What do you make of that? Do you think he's holding his hands up to being a younger actor that hadn't quite got a grip on things yet? Do you think it's kind of a reference to the change of the guard that happened on Solo? What do you kind of make of that comment from him? Because it's not negative. It doesn't seem negative at all.
It's not. I think it's fairly kind of like retrospective, really, isn't it? I think kind of commenting really on a bit of both. He didn't have as much clout or experience to maybe kind of either stand up and try and direct the character in the way that he figured it wanted, he wanted it to go. Because he says, like, I loved the original spirit, and I wanted Solo to make it a great platform from which he could do his own thing. So he's kind of, he's seeing the opportunity of what Solo could have brought had it been a success. And so he's looking at it, you know, from an opportunistic perspective that, yeah, okay, so hopefully Star Wars will propel me into bigger and better things. But also I think he obviously, the original spirit and the kind of the tone that Lord and Miller had set out originally is what had resonated with him. It's a bit of both, really. Has Solo done his career any good or any bad, or really? Because probably now Solo, everybody kind of like mentions the Star Wars sequel trilogy in Rogue One. Oh, and Solo, it's almost been forgotten about, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Lando series and how, if that then brings a slightly better appreciation for the film itself back to the fandom and to the wider general audience.
You made a really good point last week when we were talking, and you spoke about certain things in terms of legacy, in terms of certain projects don't have the after story or the backstory, and some things need to sort of live a bit and breathe a bit. Mm-hmm. And Solo kind of feels like one of those things, in that the fans that loved it really love it and appreciate it, and the fans that didn't get it ignore it. You've kind of got this with Marvel now. We spoke about the Marvels last week, in that it's not just a sequel to Captain Marvel, it's a sequel to three Disney Plus shows. And whilst a Lando series, if it ever happens, and if it involves Han and Chewie, let's say, and they do come into it and get folded into it, and rather it's going to be a film, actually. I'm still talking about, look, it's a series, it's going to be a film. So if they bring them into that, how much will it riff off what we saw in Solo, or how much will it bring Han Solo in as a standalone character? Because Han Solo as a character and Chewbacca don't need any explanation of anything that happened in Solo, a Star Wars story, really, to work as characters turning up in the film. How do you think they would play it if they did bring Solo in, and if it was Alden? And goodness knows I'd love it to be Alden. I don't really want to see too many more CGI jiggery pokeries. I want to see actors in roles playing those characters.
If they were to bring back a CGI deep faked Han Solo, I think that basically says it all, really, doesn't it, about their continued support of the Alden Ehrenreich Han Solo character. Unless, of course, it was for a very specific reason and he wasn't available. The more we get used to seeing Alden in the Han Solo character, I think the more people will accept it.
It does feel like a poison chalice in a certain way, though. I know Kathleen Kennedy had made comment about only Harrison can play Indiana Jones, which kind of kicks the stool out from underneath any future younger indie performances or actors. But by the same token, if you want to see Indiana Jones again, which I know I'd love to see more indie adventures, given the technology we've got now and all the options available, and you kind of think the same about Han Solo, obviously Ford as a talent, as a magnetic presence on screen is undeniable. And so anybody else that comes in, even if they do the best Harrison Ford impression ever, and certainly I know a lot of people were screaming for a certain Harrison Ford impersonator to get that role in Solo, but doesn't mean the guy can act a stitch. So you want the right person evoking the character. I think Alden evoked Han Solo in the way that Chris Pine definitely evoked Shatner's version of Kirk, but then made it his own. Surely that's what we want from actors taking roles moving forward. We're not so blind that we can't see that Mark Hamill ain't playing a 30-year-old Luke Skywalker unless he's under layers and layers of pixels with his voice being re-speeched, let's say.
Yeah.
You want the performance, don't you?
I much prefer being able to see the symbiotic performance where you can kind of go, okay, this guy has studied the source material. he's picked up the mannerisms or the inflections and he's now taking it in his own direction. It is one of those weird things. And I listened to a podcast the other day and I cannot remember what it was actually, where they're saying like it's only Star Wars with these three hallowed characters like Han, Luke and Leia, whereby they're so sacrosanct that you cannot recast them. I beg to differ. I think you can. And I think for the betterment of the franchise, we should. There's no real doubt in my mind. If you want Princess Leia stories, you either go for Vivian R. Blair and go for a very young Leia, or if you want a more adult Leia, then you go for, you know, a recast. It doesn't even necessarily need to be a familial match. It doesn't need to be like Billy Lord. It can be anybody. I mean, there's a number of different female actors who could do the role. And therefore, then you kind of get a different take and maybe you get to view that character in a different light in maybe a way that you haven't done before. Whereas when a character keeps on reprising their role, film after film after film, what are they bringing new to that character? What's new to the character that we haven't seen before? And if there isn't anything, then it becomes tired and it becomes a bit stale.
And also, if you are using the technology, and of course, technology is expensive, but will only get cheaper, of course. But if you're using that technology, the technology is kind of the star of the show in that sense.
Yeah.
And that's what the eyes are on. And that's the benchmark of, wow, that Luke in Book of Boba looks so much better than that Luke in Mando and so on and so forth. But by the same token, if you get an actor, be they a name like Millie Bobby Brown or Alden Ehrenreich or whoever would play Luke, and you cast the right people, it doesn't have to be stars, and they, as you say, bring their own performance to the character and it rolls on and rolls on. Of course, to a certain generation, that's their Luke, that's their Leia, that's their Han Solo. But surely you'll get more out of those actors, not just the characters, but you'll get more out of those actors than consistently and continuously trying to make them look like Mark or Harrison or Carrie or whatever. That should be the way that they go, because we want more Han Solo and Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia stories, don't we?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right. By getting them to kind of like hide behind these digital masks, as it were, you are potentially hiding a strong performer that we're not likely to see. And I think it's a shame. Maybe it needs to be a little bit of bravery from Lucasfilm and just kind of go, do you know what? We believe in this actor portraying this character. So just deal with it. And that's it. We see this in this franchise and other franchises. They don't wait around for old and curmudgeonry jaded fans to get on board. If you're not on board, then you miss out and you don't experience the fun and the excitement in the same way as fans who are engaged with it do. So it's down to them.
And nothing's a given anymore, is it? We mentioned it earlier. We had Solo didn't do great at the box office 5 years ago. We've had Indy this year didn't do great. We've had the Marvels just had a horrific 78% crash on a really quiet first week.
Yeah.
And it's a good film.
It seems to be, for whatever reason, whether or not it's a conscious effort or not, or if it is actually maybe a knock-on effect from the lack of promotion that these films have been able to have because of the strikes, but all these franchises are just not doing very well at the moment.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
We have some listeners' questions. And Mark, I hope you're ready for these because there's some really good questions here. So first one is from AJW on Twitter. And the question is, what's your favourite non-Star Wars franchise? I think I might know the answer to this one. The ones you turn to when it's time for a Star Wars break. No, there isn't such a thing.
I said there isn't such a thing. Yes, James Bond. And actually, it's one of those weird kind of things that if there was a timeline of my fandom, I was a James Bond fan before I was a Star Wars fan. Me and JB go back to like probably when I was 7 or 8, but I was a member of the original British James Bond fan club way back in the day. Read the In Flaming novels at a way too early an age of about 10 or 11, which was totally perplexed and slightly inappropriate when you actually read the content matter. So ironically, yeah, an older franchise, even older than Star Wars, which probably isn't too dissimilar from you, I would have thought, because you're a man of many multi-franchises.
Trek is the one that most people would probably think of outside of Star Wars for me, but obviously love Indy, anything Lucasfilm and Marvel. And one thing just to say about your Bond fandom, which I really like, is that you seem to like all of it equally. You don't, to me, seem to like, oh, I prefer the Roger Moore, I prefer the...
Well,
You like Ian Fleming.
Yeah, I mean, like the books, definitely. Round about the Daniel Craig era, So when he started in 2005, 2006, I reread the Fleming novels probably for the first time after about 5 or 6 years and kind of had a fresher and slightly more mature appreciation of them. Everybody always asks you, what's your favourite Star Wars film? What's your favourite Star Wars character? And it's like, who's your favourite James Bond and what's your favourite James Bond films? And I mean, other than Sean Connery being my favourite James Bond, the rest is all completely in flux. Thunderball is probably my favourite film. But then Casino Royale comes up. Matt's kind of like probably second or third on Imaginary Secret Service and that. So it's difficult. It changes like the wind.
It's very clever, though, Thunderball being your favourite film, because hasn't that been remade about 4 times?
It's been remade once. We'll never say never again. Yeah. and the thing is, like, again, like, I can remember back when I was young, you know, the non-Ian productions were like, you shall not mention their name. But actually, there are not necessarily so much the Casino Royale film from 1967, but with Never Say Never Again, there's a few redeeming qualities. Obviously, Stars Connection, directed by Irvin Kershner, and it was his next film after Empire Strikes Back. It's like Star Wars. There's no bad James Bond film. They're just James Bond films that you watch for least. So what about you? Right. So is it Trek, then?
Yeah.
If you had to kind of like say, put a...
Yeah, if I could only pick one. I mean, I kind of... Because there's so many connective tissues between Star Wars and indie in loads of different ways. And so that whole family of Lucasfilm Productions, because ILM, and it's very quickly bleeds over into Spielberg stuff. So individual Spielberg films I love. But if you're talking about franchises, which is what AJ is talking about, then it would be Trek. Marvel, again, started off as a comic reader as a kid. So I was reading Spider-Man before Star Wars ever came out. So that was a thing for me that kind of fizzled out for a while, because it was just everything was Star Wars for like 6 or 7 years. And then I suddenly saw an issue of Secret Wars, started getting Secret Wars Weekly, and then cottoned on that I was buying UK weeklies and I really wanted to buy American Monthly. So I started collecting American comics after already starting on the American run of Indie, Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. And then obviously Star Wars was carrying on. So there was all that sort of, I was learning a bit about what I was buying, if that makes sense. You'd have to say, I mean, I've written for the official Trek mag and the official Trek sites. I've stage hosted at Trek conventions. So Trek is something I know pretty well. Yeah, to answer AJ's question, yeah, it would be Trek for me and Bond for you. Next question is from a very, 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 very good friend of mine, John Hicks. And his question is, which creator alive today would you love to see handle a Star Wars movie? So who do you like to see take on a Star Wars film?
That's a real difficult one, isn't it? Because no matter who you pick, there's pros and cons to everything. I would quite like to see Chris Nolan do a Star Wars film. Maybe more than Chris Nolan doing a James Bond film, if I'm honest. I appreciate his respect for the art form of cinema. Thing is, if you were to probably write a list of 20 directors, you'd have to cross-check to see how many have been associated with a Star Wars production or some kind of project in the last 10 years that hasn't come about. And then there's those who have done a bit of Star Wars, like we said, Taika Waititi. But I don't know, what about you? Who would you pick?
In terms of eye for the camera, then Nolan... Definitely.
Yeah.
Weirdly, and the guy doesn't like Star Wars, which breaks my heart, and he was associated closely for a good long while with Star Trek, was Quentin Tarantino. I'd be curious to see what he would do with Star Wars, to see how deep he would take that he's not a Star Wars fan, so it won't happen. Denis Villeneuve as well. The thing with Star Wars is that in the same way, for the longest time, Star Wars didn't bring in big-name actors. You know, that episode of Mando, when you've got Lizzo, Jack Black and Christopher Lloyd, would have never happened on Lucas's watch. It just wouldn't. That was anathema to kind of what he was trying to do. He was bringing in stage actors and quality actors. And Harrison Ford became a megastar by the time of Jedi because of Raiders and Blade Runner and Empire. I mean, good luck to him, of course. I'm sure Lucas thought that. But that wasn't the plan. It wasn't starring somebody in the way that you would cast Brad Pitt in a film, because it's Brad Pitt. Name over the poster. Tom Cruise, name over the poster. Chris McQuarrie would be a decent one to throw into the mix as well. I think he's a fantastic director. So there's certain elements like that. So I don't think Star Wars needs a big name director. It needs people that get it.
Whilst you're talking, I was trying to think of his name, and I actually had to go on Wikipedia because I couldn't think of his name. But one person who has obviously worked on some Star Wars is Ant-Man director Peyton Reed. Out of everybody, I think, from the TV directorial kind of stable, as it were, the Lucasfilm stable, I think him and Rick Famuyiwa, those two, I think I'd like to see take a step up. We know Peyton Reed definitely can. I know Rick has done I'm not necessarily sure if he's done anything to that size and scale, but he seems to be a fairly steady hand with Mando. So therefore, I think he probably would be able to do something pretty cool. And all his action set pieces tend to be the best of each series.
And I'll throw one in there for John, and he'll know that I've thought this for 40 years because I've known John for 40 years. I would throw in Spielberg. I know it's never going to happen. It couldn't happen for Jedi because Spielberg was part of the guild, directs guild, and he wasn't going to step away from that. And various other reasons. He's been so closely associated with Star Wars to varying degrees for the whole lifespan of the saga and never directed anything other than those little mini sort of action scenes in Revenge of the Sith, you know, the Utah Power stuff. But I'd love to see Spielberg get his teeth into a real classic era Star Wars story.
Hi, this is Dorian Kinji, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
Geordie Pete at Star Wars. Good question, this. Which Star Wars planet would you want to live on and why? Peaceful middle-class Naboo or slaving away on Kessel? So if you could pick one Star Wars planet that you or your Star Wars alter ego would live on in the main Star Wars galaxy, where would it be? Because we're not going to Peridia. Where would you want to go?
Yeah, definitely not Peridia. I've always liked the architecture of Naboo. I think it might be a bit quiet. I don't think there's probably many rock and roll gigs there.
No, that's true.
The way every planet has been set out since day one, there's always a pro and a con. You know, if you like to live somewhere warm, live in Tatooine. But, you know, there's dick all there, really. If you want to go to Hoth, there's a great place to go if you want to get away from everything. But, you know, it's darn freezing cold. So probably somewhere like Naboo would be my choice from definitely the films, I think. Definitely not Hosnian Prime, because that doesn't seem to have much of a longevity. But some of a bit of nightlife. So I think if I lived in Naboo, I would probably have some kind of apartment on Coruscant as well, which is a real cop-out answer.
That's a great answer. It's like if I ever won the lottery, I'd get an apartment in Vegas. I know I'd do it. I think you're right about Naboo. It's a beautiful, beautiful location. I mean, when back in the day when you'd be playing Battlefront, running around shooting battle droids, you saw a lot of the architecture in Naboo there. So I definitely put that on my mark card. And I also think Coruscant, because obviously so much is going on. But if I lived on Coruscant, I'd rather be living the Mon Mothma lifestyle on Coruscant.
Oh, yeah.
You know, than the Martez sisters version of Coruscant, you know, which is a bit sort of grim and grimy. But of course, that's where all the cool stuff happens. So if you're living in the Star Wars galaxy and you can look after yourself, you know the lay of the land and you know what to do, you know, you'd cope with that. So I would say my ultimate answer would be Coruscant, actually.
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? No one's discussed, as far as I'm aware, like, at what level do you not want to live on Coruscant?
I'll tell you what, on what level you don't want to live. You don't want to live on 1313.
Exactly. So does that mean that, like, anything above, I don't know, 500 is probably a good place to live? Or does it have to be higher? You know, I mean, was it maybe the top 10%? So maybe it's only the first 10 levels are, you know, exclusive enough.
Hi, this is Tamara Carlson Woodard. I work on the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
We've got three final questions. They're fairly quick-fire questions, and they're from some fella called Brian Cameron, who apparently is the host of a show called Good Morning Tatooine. Anyway, first question. On the back of the Anthony Daniels Collection auction, what piece of Star Wars memorabilia would you like to own and why?
Well, let's do these questions quick-fire. And so I would probably say it would have to be like an original Graflex lightsaber, a screen-used lightsaber, or failing that, maybe a screen-used E11.
Mine would be Lucas's original handwritten draft, first draft of the Star Wars. His very first noodlings, the very first thing he wrote down. That would be the one thing I would like. Second question from Mr. Cameron. With two galaxies in the Star Wars verse now, does the home galaxy need a name? And if so, what should it be?
I think we're only going to get a name for something like that, I guess, if we really start to have like multiple stories jump in between the two galaxies.
Yeah,
what would it be? I mean, I think we were just calling it the Prime Galaxy when we were, when we're talking about it on the reaction chat. So something like that, or Imperious Prime in the Empire era, or something like that. There you go.
I don't know. I mean, it's like Earth is called Earth, and the stuff you pick up from the ground is called Earth. You know,
I thought it was Terra. Aren't we referred to as Terrans?
Yeah, Terra Firma. And our sun is called Sol and the moon is called Luna. And so there are other names. I think we're just lazy, aren't we? But I think we're more likely to get a name for the other galaxy than we are to get for the Star Wars galaxy.
Exactly,
So, Brian, that is not an answer, but it's all you're getting for this one. And his final question, this really is a quick fire one. What are the two marks getting me for Christmas? I don't know what I'm getting him. I'm going to get him something, but I haven't got his address, so I can't send it to him.
Oh, bugger.
So what are you going to get him for Christmas then, Mark?
Probably the same kind of non-answer that I gave to his second question. Probably nothing.
See, you ask and you don't get.
Yeah, but thanks for sending them the questions in, Brian.
Yes, and everybody else, thank you. Keep them coming. I'll put another request out for questions this week.
That'll be cool. If people do want to send in questions, how can they do it, dude?
Well, first things first, thanks for listening to this episode of Making Tracks. And if you do want to be a part of the action, visit fanthatracks.com and be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at fanthatracks. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. Yes, Good Morning Tatooine. Live Sunday evenings at 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, and 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. And check out our Fanthatracks Radio Friday night rotation every Friday night at 7 o'clock UK time with new episodes of The Phantom of Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, fanthatracks.com, our social media feeds, Fanthatracks TV, and Fanthatracks Radio are absolutely
free.
So no Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news. And man, I am out.
Brilliant. Well, that was another fun-filled episode. Cheers to you, sir. That is all we have time for this week. Until next week, everybody have a fantastic Star Wars week, whatever that means to you. So until then, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fantha Tracks Radio, it's Planet Leia.